Dr. Pry, as an intelligence officer with the Central Intelligence Agency, you were responsible for analyzing Soviet and Russian nuclear strategy. You analyzed Soviet and Russian nuclear strategy along with operational plans, military doctrines, threat perceptions, and you were responsible for developing U.S. paradigms for strategic warning from 1985 to 1995. Please discuss the significance of your responsibilities while working at the CIA. Specifically, what were some of the Soviet and Russian nuclear strategies and operational plans established at that time? And at the same time, where do you see that direction going in the future?
The Soviets, as do the Russians today, think very differently about nuclear weapons than the United States and the West. We think of nuclear weapons as political weapons. They're not really weapons to be used. They're weapons that are meant to be used to deter war, including nuclear war. And so the idea is to not to use them in the first place. You know, that's what the basis of our strategy was. We believed and had this delusion for the long time through our arms control process that, you know, we thought that the Soviets agreed with us about the concept of mutual assured destruction, that both sides would have a balance of nuclear power and be able to wipe each other out, and therefore both sides would be deterred and never would wipe each other out. And so we thought that through arms control agreements, we would have a meeting of minds on this. And our object was always to prevent the occurrence of a nuclear war in the first place. They never subscribed to that point of view in reality. In their military doctrine and strategy, nuclear weapons are to be used. They're not seen as separate from conventional weapons. We also think of weapons as fitting into pigeonholes or categories. So there's conventional weapons, that is general-purpose forces like tanks and airplanes and infantry, and you can think of fighting a conventional war just limited to these forces. And then there are biological and chemical weapons, and so we have concepts of chemical and biological war. You'd fight using those, but that there's like fire breaks or thresholds that are both psychological and operational that are very important, so that if you're going to go from conventional war to chemical or biological war using a weapon of mass destruction like that, that's a big decision that maybe a president would make. So we would not typically plan to use chemical or biological weapons, just in extraordinary circumstances. And then the next fire break, the highest fire break above that, would be nuclear war, you know, which would be the biggest, hardest decision to make, to be made by a president, you know, the National Command Authority. And so it's not something that we would normally exercise around and train for and plan for, because it's the most unlikely, most extraordinary circumstances. In fact, a lot of Americans convinced themselves in the way they thought of it, hey, if we have to go to nuclear weapons, then deterrence has failed and our strategy has failed, okay? Because we also believed you couldn't win a nuclear war. And this is a natural thing for a democracy to think. And those who thought that might even be right about it for democracy. Maybe it's impossible for a country like the United States or Britain, those who have nuclear weapons, or France, that are democracies, to win a nuclear war if the characteristic of the nuclear war involves large civilian casualties. Because the highest value in a democracy is its people. You know, the people are the ultimate source of political power. They're the ultimate legitimacy of the state. And if the people die in such massive numbers, then in fact you are failing. You are losing the war. The people are dying. And the purpose of the nuclear weapons, which was to preserve their lives and preserve that freedom and the democracy, has failed. Most people thought of it in the West. The Soviets thought of nuclear weapons very differently. They thought of them as just very powerful conventional weapons. Just like chemical weapons, biological weapons were also thought of as, yeah, they're weapons of mass destruction, but they're also usable weapons, useful instruments to achieve victory in war. And the Soviets believed that you could win a nuclear war. You could fight and win a nuclear war. And so they didn't have these big fire breaks, these big watershed decision points where, oh, should I go to chemical and biological? I got to get the president's permission, and therefore I'm not going to train a lot about that because the nuclear threshold, you know, better not go there. You know, this is a big scary threshold we've got to cross. They plan for all of, to use all of these things. They plan for a continuity of operations. You know, the war could begin with conventional forces, but they plan right in to all of their plans, also using chemical and biological weapons and nuclear weapons as well, tactical nuclear weapons, strategic nuclear weapons. In fact, they thought it was inevitable that if there was a war, especially involving the great powers, that it would probably quickly escalate to using nuclear weapons. And indeed, you know, we had a fundamental misunderstanding of their war plans. They thought, like us, they would be so afraid of nuclear weapons that if there was a big war in Europe, that it would be weeks or months of conventional fighting before they finally resorted. In fact, they thought that we'd be the first ones to use nuclear tactical nuclear weapons. In the West's view, in America's view of how the nuclear war scenario was, we thought that we would have to resort to tactical nuclear weapons to stop their armored spearheads so the U.S. would be the first one to use nuclear weapons. And then they would use nukes in response to us, but primarily in response to us because they too were afraid and very reluctant to use them. But that turned out not to be the case when we were able to capture their war plans when the Warsaw Pact fell. We found out they planned to use nuclear weapons on day one. They planned to do massive nuclear strikes, including EMP attacks, but also strikes on bomber bases, places where the tanks were organized, areas where the infantry would be, to do as much damage as they could to the armed forces. They weren't going to attack the cities and try to kill large numbers of the people because they would like to capture them intact if they could. But they were using nuclear weapons to defeat and destroy our armed forces. That was their plan. And not only nuclear weapons, but chemical weapons, biological weapons, the whole nine yards, everything all at once to try to overwhelm us in a massive nuclear, chemical, biological blitzkrieg employing their vastly superior numbers of armor and infantry to overwhelm. And they also hoped that the technological surprise of using nuclear weapons, this most decisive instrument, early on in the war would be against us, and they would be able to achieve something like a nuclear Pearl Harbor. They also thought about disarming strikes and planned for disarming nuclear strikes led by an EMP attack that would paralyze our command, control, and communications so that we wouldn't be able to retaliate. You know, they would be able to slow us down and paralyze our communications so we couldn't get emergency action messages out to our missiles and out to our bombers and out to our submarines, and then followed immediately by massive strikes on our missile silos, bomber bases, and by the ballistic missile submarines in port, so they could destroy as many of our nuclear forces as possible. And by that means, the Soviet Union believed, you know, it could fight and win a nuclear war. And even if it did escalate to the level of cities, where cities would be blasted, they still believed it was possible to win a nuclear war. Why is that? Because the Soviet Union was a totalitarian society, and people were not the most valued. They were not there. The Soviet Union was not a democracy. The legitimacy of the state was not the people. The state did not exist, you know, to serve the people. The state existed to serve the revolution. And the revolutionary vanguard that was the leaders of the Communist Party and of the military, it was the preservation of their lives that was the most important thing. The geniuses who understood that what we needed, that the best thing for all mankind was the triumph of global communism, of communism over the whole world, they were the ones that were the most important ones to serve. They're the ones that their lives had to be saved so that they could achieve this goal. And if the Russian lives of the Russian people had to be sacrificed to achieve the socialist paradise, you know, so be it. So they were willing to take enormous losses. And you could see this in World War II, which they describe as the Great Fatherland War. And the Soviet histories of World War II describe it as a great triumph. You know, even though they lost 30 million dead, 30 million dead, if we fought a war where it cost 30 million dead, would we consider that a victory? Even if we defeated the enemy and crushed him and their leader assassinated himself, as Hitler finally did, and we had taken 30 million dead, there's no way that a democracy would probably look at that as anything like a victory, any more than either side. If you think about the American Civil War, you know, where proportionally we took far fewer casualties. We lost 750,000 people. And even though the Union won that war and brought the South, nobody really considered that some kind of a glorious victory. You know, it was a tragedy for both sides. Their conception of fighting the war and the idea that you could win the war, you know, it's different as night and day, this notion that you know you could win a nuclear war. That was what everything was geared toward. and it was geared toward nuclear first use. And it has changed. We found as it moved from the Soviet period into the Russian period, it has changed. It has changed for the worse. The Russians, they went through the period when their economy collapsed and when the Warsaw Pact fell apart, and they could no longer afford to keep up with the West with conventional forces. There was a period when, you know, the Red Army became, weak. It wasn't able to take on the Chechen rebels. It lost the Battle of Grozny against the Chechen rebels and became kind of a hollow shell of itself, you know, because it's much more expensive to maintain good, effective, conventional general-purpose forces, the tanks, the planes, the training of the infantry, the mobile artillery. That's much more expensive than building nuclear weapons. Nuclear weapons are much, much less expensive compared to that. Russia turned more and more to rely on its nuclear weapons than the Soviet Union ever did. Russia turned more and more to rely on the idea of nuclear first use under a broader range of circumstances. You know, the Soviet Union had such powerful general-purpose forces that if you thought of small wars, or it had a projectile power to fight a small war outside of the Soviet Union or along the periphery or something like that, under those circumstances, they would rarely think about, you know, they wouldn't have to use nuclear weapons. They'd be able to do it with their general purpose forces. But Russia, the Russian general staff, you know, because of the weakness of the Red Army in the aftermath of the collapse of the Soviet Union, they thought of using nuclear weapons under all contingencies. You know, it was a silver bullet for almost any circumstance. And so they started building a wider variety of nuclear weapons, including tactical nuclear weapons, battlefield weapons that had very low yield, that produced no fallout, so they could even use them on their own territory if they had to. Nuclear weapons for intercepting aircraft. Imagine how effective a nuclear weapon would be, a clean nuclear weapon for do that. By clean, I mean it has no fallout, so you could take out a whole bunch of the enemies. And to deal with the technological superiority, because they saw during the Persian Gulf Wars how the U.S. had these technologically superior conventional weapons, high-tech conventional weapons, cruise missiles, and highly accurate fighter aircraft that could put missiles right down the chimney, of another building, coordinated with communications and satellite. You know, it was a vast electronic array, basically high-tech, highly dependent on advanced electronics, so that we could do amazing things with our conventional forces. Well, obviously, to compensate for that, they thought, well, our nuclear firepower can be relied upon to compensate for that. And the idea of an EMP attack, you know, would destroy America's electronics. The very thing that made our military so strong was also our Achilles heel. And so if we do a nuclear EMP attack right from the outset, America will be on its back, and then we can destroy them. You know, with our general purpose forces can come in, and it'll be good enough at that point to take out the American giant that's been laid low by the EMP attack. And we can also use nuclear firepower if we have to, even at that stage, to take out America. So Russia became even more aggressive and cutting edge in its conception of using nuclear weapons. And they've developed new generations of nuclear weapons, tactical nuclear weapons, for specialized defense. Nuclear weapons specialized for making EMP. They're called super EMP weapons by the Russians that make extraordinarily powerful EMP fields. Nuclear weapons that are specialized for neutron radiation. They call them mini neutron warheads. You know, they make a very low explosive yield. They produce no fallout, so they're clean, but they put out a tremendous burst of neutrons so that our armored personnel carriers and our tanks, that it will kill the guys in the APCs and tanks. They are also very effective against air, you know, that way, because the neutrons will destroy the electronics in the aircraft and kill the pilots. For anti-ballistic missile systems, nuclear weapons that are specialized for X-rays, so you can intercept warheads that are coming in. So they've got this wide range, and maybe things we don't even know about. You know, after all, you know, we haven't developed in the West a new nuclear weapon.